The following episode contains intellectual, political, and philosophical content that some may find offensive. And to those people, it should be said. Really?
So I met you around 2011, 2012. I had started getting interested in politics and provincial politics, and then I learned about the Freedom Party. I got an election sign, put it on my lawn, and helped out with Al Gretzky's campaign in London West. Throughout the years after that, involved with your show, Just Right, a guest on it a number of times, some Freedom Party events. But to go back, the Freedom Party of Ontario, if I'm not mistaken, was formed out of the UN Party in 1984?
That's correct. The UN Party itself was formed out of the Libertarian Party of Canada, which itself was formed out of the Libertarian Party of the United States, which itself was formed out of the Republican Party of the United States. So if you take the chain back, and that includes both kind of the ideology and the people who were originally involved. And most of the people who started UN Party were what we would call libertarians, okay? So they were very much into economic freedom. These ideas appealed to me then, and they still do today. But unfortunately, libertarians come with a big package, and that's the whole infiltration of all they say is less government. You know, more freedom through less government. Government's not a quantity. It's something that exists. It's in the moral faculty. You get more freedom through proper government, proper governance. And what people think is government is merely the state running amok and people have taking control of a mechanism of force that is not governing, it is ruling. These are huge distinctions.
Freedom Party was responsible for a number of policies in Ontario over the years.
We changed a lot of laws. It's an interesting observation and something that people need to be aware of. I see it around me all the time. I've been in this now for 40 years, easy. On the front lines of what people might call fringe politics. That's where all the action is, by the way. And what I have seen has been a lesson. Before I even got involved with Freedom Party, and we changed the UN Party to Freedom Party on January 1st in the Orwellian year of 1984.
I know, right?
Even then, we were writing literature like 1984 is here, and not referring to the year, but to Orwell's book. We were already at that stage. We already realized at that time that Ontario was essentially falling into fascism. And if that isn't abundantly clear today, and it isn't to a lot of people, amazingly, but then you'd have to be asleep at the wheel. But in any case, we lobbied a number of things, and we basically won every lobby and ad hoc issue we got into. The big one, of course, that most people don't even know about, is we're the party that brought Sunday shopping to Ontario.
That's right.
The leaders in that whole thing were myself and Mark Emery at City Lace Bookshop, a fellow named Paul Magder, who ran Magder Furs in Toronto. We had Douglas Devnick, the head of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, because, of course, they believe the Sabbath is on a Saturday. We ran ads in the newspapers across Ontario and pretty well shamed all of the other three parties who all went on record opposing Sunday shopping to open the doors on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the many things we've done. We've also, in London, Ontario, the city was planning to spend $110 million on hosting a two-week event, the 1991 Pan Am Games. And we fought and defeated that. And then, of course, there were a number of other tax initiatives that we fought and defeated, which are known euphemistically as business improvement areas. They call them associations now, but that's illegal. They shouldn't be allowed to call them association because that implies that the people joined it voluntarily. Business improvement areas are not voluntary. They're another level of government. They have them in business areas all throughout the province, and it's just another level of government. And they're all trouble. Every time they get one to improve an area, watch that area go down. Basically, they move into areas that have already been improved, and then they try to kind of take credit for it as they ruin it, because politicians should not be running the economy. And then, of course, my famous contribution to all of this that we did through Freedom Party, I'm the first person to have won a case against the landlord in London over racism, of all things, before Human Rights Commission of Ontario, and I beat the commission. I'm not a lawyer, but I represented this landlord, and everything I'm saying, by the way, is completely documented down to the most minutia of detail on Freedom Party's website, which is freedomparty.on.ca. Pretty much a static site of what we've done in the past and what our policy, platform, constitution, and statement of principles are, which we think that every political party should have, but most other parties don't, or they have very vague statements saying, yeah, we believe in democracy, or some vague thing that they really never get around to defining. But it's been an interesting ride, I'll tell you, and we've been involved in so many issues and so many other functions. It's a learning experience, and I'm trying to bring it to the public so that people do not repeat the same mistakes that I made and that we made, and that they do repeat the things we did right.
That's one of the main reasons why I was interested in the Freedom Party. You do keep a record of everything that you state, accomplish, criticize, any material from the other parties, like their platforms.
You just brought up one of the biggest principles in any kind of political activity. If you didn't write it down, you didn't do it. Anything that a person does politically and wants to be known for, the recording of the event, putting it in a newsletter, recording it on video, however you can preserve an actual verifiable record of that activity, is almost more important than the event itself.
Otherwise, history can be rewritten by the winners.
It generally is, but even so, if it's not written at all, there is no history. I once asked political science professor Salim Mansoor, who hails from India, about all these huge, huge slaughters and disasters that occurred in Indian history throughout time. I said, how come we haven't heard of them? And he just looked me in the eyes, because nobody wrote it down. it never got into the history books that became widely accepted and known. And there's so much history. I mean, everybody can focus on whatever area of it that is relevant to them.
Other notable initiatives and things that the Freedom Party has helped with or supported, of course, was Mark Emery's decades-long conquest to see marijuana decriminalized or at the very least legalized, and a couple years ago that dream came to fruition. Another one was fighting against the then Kathleen Wynne / Dalton McGuinty liberal government's hydro fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Basically anywhere there has been government overreach, overstep, and mismanagement, the Freedom Party has been there.
Having said that, yes. And I would always encourage people to go and protest where necessary, to do their ad hoc issues. But I have a really bad news story about this.
Okay.
And that is that here we are, a party that's been around since 84. We basically won every one of our ad hoc issues. I mean, anything we went out and protested or campaigned on, it went our way. And we did campaigning on municipal, provincial, and federal levels. But here's the bottom line, it didn't change anything.
Mm.
Government just moved on as normal. We fought the Pan Am Games for 91, and then they just did it differently last time to get the Pan Am Games, and it's always the same corruption. Big public sports events are huge corruption centers. But in any case, until a party like Freedom Party gets elected provincially, or something like the People's Party of Canada, which I got to learn a lot about and became a fan of and got to meet Maxime Bernier. These are the only two parties I see in Canada who are even remotely anywhere close to anything I would call the right, you know?
And that's why I like the Freedom Party as well, is because even though you might not, quote-unquote, win, it's important to still make people aware and do it for yourself as well. Just to tell yourself that you did it, you let people know about it, it was worth the effort.
Listen, I can create the pool of water and I can lead a horse to it, but I can't make them drink, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that is really what people have to do. You know, our major goal is to let Ontarians know as a party that we want to give them a choice during an election, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just getting a candidate on the ballot is all it takes. And people think it is such a big deal to change governance when all you have to do is vote for a group of people who are all on the same page. That's why political parties are very important. You can't have a bunch of independents trying to coordinate their activities and expect that to function for very long. But parties are disciplinary creatures. They are private institutions, contrary to what most people believe. and the government is trying to take them over and regulate them to a point where for the past several years, since Nguyen was in, we were not even allowed to freely associate. All the laws against freedom of association are not new to Ontario. I mean, consider that during Nguyen's governance in Ontario, that government actually had the nerve to prevent a party like us from getting together for a fundraiser if our party leader or any of our candidates attended. They weren't allowed to attend.
Yeah, that's bullshit to me, because they're probably hugely guilty of that.
It doesn't even matter. That's the point of a party. You want to be able to freely associate. And the reason for it was the gas scandal. Because, see, what the left always does is project its own evils onto everybody and then punishes everybody for what it did.
Mm-hmm.
Then they reduced our ability to raise money. We used to have a single person could give up to $10,000, $15,000 to a party. It was reduced to $1,600. Every party has to report every cent it gets from every individual to a regulating body called Elections Ontario, which in turn puts their name and their contribution on the line. This has been going on for years. That is utterly unacceptable.
It's very intrusive, I find.
Beyond intrusive. Who gave money to what party? And I had a lot of people saying, I don't want to give you money because it's public. So then you try to create a private option, and what did the government do? They started regulating private lobbies and making them basically go along with the same laws that political parties have to do. The system is so corrupt, it's very difficult to work within it or around it. But that's all we have right now. And it's fast disappearing. I'm very concerned about it. Right now, even Ford in Ontario has pretty well abandoned government entirely. He's not governing at all. He has proven himself to be a complete fascist in every meaning and sense of that word. And I do not use that word lightly. That word has meaning. My family lived through it during World War II, and people think it's always Nazism or something. Fascism is merely state control over private interests, private property, private choice.
Right. So let's unpack that, because that's one of the important reasons why I wanted to reach out and talk to you, because not only is the subject matter fascinating to me and I think very important, people's incorrect distinction of the isms in our society. So why don't we just go through them piecemeal? What is, by definition, you said state control over private property, but a little bit more in detail. First, what is fascism?
Well, fascism is a form of government that controls private interest. This is why Hitler, he wanted to take over the factories, and he did. But he didn't own them. He just controlled them. And that's fascism. What has been incorrectly called crony capitalism, which is really crony fascism, is when government gets into bed with private interests, either by giving them monopoly status over the competition that should be free and open, as a free market would demand in a free society, or by outrightly banning competition or getting directly involved with them. And that has been the bane of politics since the Roman days. Okay, this is nothing new. Nothing we're going through today is any different from what's happened in history. But fascism is no different than socialism. All socialism leads to fascism. They're both subsets of collectivism.
Right.
Which basically places the group above the individual, as opposed to individualism, which places the individual above the group, and that's what Western society has been based on. And that essentially defines left and right. The left is collectivism, the right is individualism. And that's why the biggest crime ever done in defining left and right, and I paid a price to learn this lesson, to accept the idea that fascism is a right-wing phenomenon. It is not. It never was. It was put there on the right artificially by the Democratic Party in the States after World War II, because the Democratic Party supported Hitler. What else is new? They were the party of slavery. They're the party of segregation. Their whole mentality is race. It only falls natural that they are on the left, where collectivism is. Individualism does not group people in groups. It's not even possible to think in terms of race if you are an individualist as identified on what is the right. And by the way, there is no spectrum. There's no middle of the road. These are mythologies. There's only two polarities, and you're either on one or the other. you know, people say I'm in the middle of the road because, well, I'm in favor of abortion, therefore they think that's the left. But I like to see economic restraint and control, and therefore they think they're on the right. So when they combine those two, they think they're in the middle. They're 100% left on the one issue, and they're 100% right on the other, and all that means is they're confused. Every single issue, and even every vote, no matter if there's 50 parties and 50 candidates in a running, all boils down to a binary. When you, the voter, get down to that last choice, even if there are 100 other candidates on the other side, in your head you'll be thinking of it like this. You'll be thinking, well, it's my candidate or the rest, right? And you lump all the rest into choice number two. The objective of any political party trying to come up new on the horizon is to become number two. The other parties all have a role. I would never, ever prevent other parties from forming or individuals from running as independents. That's crucial that those rights exist.
One of the things that I remember you and Robert Vaughn, who's your co-host of your podcast / radio show for years, Just Right, mm-hmm. which I recommend everybody check out at justrightmedia.org.
That's correct.
Is, even though you just expressed, and I totally agree with, fascism and socialism / communism / collectivism are on the same side, but what you and Robert had said was the difference between fascism and socialism is homicide and suicide.
I think what you might be thinking of is a phrase, difference between socialism and communism. Socialism is when you jump off the cliff, and communism is when you hit bottom. But the real difference between fascism and socialism is the issue of how they regard property. That's the only thing.
Right.
Under socialism, it's ownership and control. Same as communism. Communism, socialism, equal definitions. They're really no different. It has more to do with what the social system is being used for. And as long as it's called socialism, generally the public gets the cut of the stolen goods. But when it's communism, the public gets nothing. It's all in the hands of the rulers. But still, it's the same system. And fascism will always be the mechanism by which the philosophy of socialism is exercised. It always comes down to fascism.
And I try to tell people this and explain to them that they're all on one side. They're all on the left. I often joke that if you don't stand up for what's right, all you get is what's left. And
that's right. You ought to remember that one. It's very logical. Let's accept the old scale. On the left is communism and on the right is fascism. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where's freedom?
In the middle, I guess, if the scale existed, but it doesn't.
Well, that was the thinking of many people. That's not where freedom exists. That's not freedom at all. Because if you're going to stick to the idea of the scale, in the middle, that would mean you are accepting an equal portion of right-wing ideas and left-wing ideas. And that ain't freedom. That's two forms of fascism mixed together, which is exactly what Hitler told the people. He appealed to the fascist on the right and the fascist on the left. In fact, on my show, I refer to Willem Wright, who wrote and lived during World War II and saw the fascism. And he distinguished left and right between red fascism and black fascism. That was how he saw it.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, the black fascism was the Nazis, the red fascism were the communists.
Right.
That was the central issue in Germany, and that's why Germany blew itself up. It was two left-wing factions fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the only way to look at the left is tyranny, the right is freedom. There's a whole psychology behind it as well. But to me, the great damage being done, and why the right has been losing the battle so much, is because they have been avoiding being labeled right, because the left pulled a fast one on them, another epistemological trick. You should be proud to be on the right. A person should be absolutely, joyously proud and full of virtue to know they are on the right, because the right is for freedom, capitalism, individualism.
Right, because it's really difficult for most people to identify being on the right because of another R word, which is racism, which I find
it's
a joke.
Racism is only possible to the left. That's why Hitler was a racist. He's on the left. You have to be a collectivist. You have to think of people as in terms of groups. You have to think in terms of identity politics.
Yeah, a lot of people think that racism just means you hate or are disgusted by another race.
I don't know anyone like that. I've never met a racist as defined by the left, but I know many racists on the left.
Right.
And here's the thing. The proper definition of racism, it's an ism, okay? So it's a political form of either the government legislating in favor of some people on the basis of their race over others, or legislating against them. Whether you're legislating in favor of the master race, or legislating against some other race because you don't like it, both of those things are racism.
Mm-hmm. And it's all predicated on the idea of oppressor and victim.
Well, of course, that's the divide they want to create. Everything on the left is about destruction and divide and changing whatever is in place. And this is the thing. I've learned these lessons the hard way, let me tell you. Every issue has to be polarized. And everybody says, oh, politics is getting so polarized. It always was. Because all politics is binary. Look, you're going to either choose Biden or Trump. What's the middle choice? Can you tell me, please?
I can't.
Right? And so they go, oh, I don't know, it's all polarized. How am I going to pick something? No, the damage done to the right by refusing to accept that it is right is insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all over one word. This is how important concepts are to human thinking. Today we are witnessing a vast majority of the public hiding in their homes over a disease that is absolutely no threat, but they think it is because they are completely mesmerized over a word that is called a case. Right? The papers are full of cases all day long. New numbers, cases, cases. We knew this was coming a year ago. And a case is a nothing. A case is not an illness. It's not a hospitalization. It's not even someone who's symptomatic of anything. It's just a case. And they're not even measuring it correctly. But this is all it takes to terrify a public.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not being told what's true about everything that's going on. What is right. All they get is what is left. And that is why the left is going on this censorship purge. You think that's something new to the left? What do you think Hitler did?
Well, yeah, what do you think Stalin did?
All of them. And they're all on the left. And there's a perfect example of black fascism and red fascism.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I find Antifa so funny. Because they claim to be anti-fascist, but exactly what they're doing is fascism.
Don't forget, that's not by accident or to be humorous. They're doing that on purpose to mess with your mind so you cannot think. This is literally how it works. The left is a master of epistemology, which is what our show is about, by the way.
And for those who don't know, epistemology is...
it's a second branch of philosophy that teaches us, and it's a very strict discipline, what is actually true and what is not, and how we can verify it, right? Epistemology is basically the process of reason, and reason is a quality of on the right. On the left, you have subjectivism and intrinsicism.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's your divide again. Everything comes down to left and right eventually. And metaphysics, you're dealing with reality on the right, and you're dealing with unreality and artificial concepts on the left. Concepts that they are subject to themselves because they aren't thinking right, pardon the pun.
Mm-hmm.
They're using the wrong definitions for the wrong words, and so they can't think, and they're terrified of the right because the right can think and can out-debate them on any issue, which is why they need censorship. When they censor the right, they are, in effect, confessing to the public that we are evil, we are wrong, and essentially, we're a death cult, and the left is a death cult. Any step you take in that direction, you're moving in that direction.
And another couple of groups that can be lumped into the same side as communism, socialism, fascism, collectivism, is white supremacy, the KKK, neo-Nazis, because the way I like to think about it is all those groups that I just mentioned, someone or some people exercising control over someone's life and their freedom.
Absolutely.
Ability
absolutely.
To choose and their individualism.
They absolutely do not accept the notion that we are all equal and that we all have a right to our own lives. And this is so fundamental. And the KKK, by the way, that is a completely Democratic Party phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. The Dixiecrats.
Always was. From history throughout. And people still don't know this because the left is dominating the minds of most people. And so you get this whole situation.
the big buzzword for like the last year and over the summer is white supremacy.
Well, the thing that people have to understand about the term white supremacy is that they're not talking about skin color. They're talking about culture, mm-hmm. Western culture. And they see Western culture as a creation of the white man, mainly because of the Anglosphere, thanks to a whole number of wonderful, fateful things that happened in history that led to the discovery of individual rights, that led to the writings of people like Adam Smith, who understood that an economy was best when people acted in their own self-interest and that everyone benefited from this. But these are not the reasons to support capitalism. Capitalism is the only moral economic system known to man.
Yeah, it's the financial arm of individualism.
Yes, it's just the economics of a free society.
Mm-hmm.
The government's job is to be the referee, not a player in the game.
Mm-hmm. There's also the Magna Carta.
Absolutely. These rights were won over historic precedent and the discovery of the principles that make them work. Consider mankind was living in the mud, basically, until the last couple hundred years during the discovery of capitalism, which made everything from automobiles to space travel possible. No one a few hundred years ago could ever have even conceived of that beyond fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of power that it unleashed. Why didn't it happen earlier in history? Because people were always persecuting the people who were investigating science, whether it was Galileo or whoever, right? And so whenever you are dealing with the masses, this is something I'm talking about on the show this week, you'll be persecuted. The masses have always persecuted their saviors, which is sort of what the story of Christ is about. It continues today. We're watching it today. All the hatred of Trump, irrational to the core.
I really was sort of hesitant about getting into Trump, but it's such a fascinating topic. And the people who are opposed to Trump have a little bit of right to have qualms with him because his style is rough around the edges. But everything that they say about him, claim about him, get him to denounce, even though he's done it multiple times, they have created a fictional monster in the minds of everybody else.
And well, of course, that's because the left is afraid of him. You know, there's a great post going around with him sitting in a chair in a black and white picture, and he's looking at you, and he says, "It's not me they're after. It's you. I'm just in the way." And when people talk about the style of Trump, I do not object to it at all. I welcome it and I cheer it. I think it's wonderful. It's the first time we've heard a politician who's not a politician talking honestly and saying to the left what needs to be said. When they lie, he calls them a liar. You're damn right. I love it when he does that. I did that every time when I went to all candidates' debates. You see a liar in front of you, you call it. You must always pronounce moral judgment. If you don't do it, you're going to lose.
Because one of the big things about the left is if they can't beat their opponent with their arguments, they attack the credibility of the opponent.
All it is destroy, burn down buildings, racism, systemic, anything they can attach to that, which is nonsense. They rewrite history in a way that is so false, it's just ludicrous. They ignore the fact of slavery, that it's the United States and Britain that ended slavery, and those were mostly by white people, by the way, that slavery was largely a practice in the rest of the world, and that there were all kinds of black slave owners of slaves, even in the United States.
The practice of slavery throughout history, it's horrible.
Well, you have to understand, slavery throughout history has been a class of people. In ancient Athens and stuff, slaves could even own slaves. And it was generally based on debtors and who got in debt to who, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way we think of debt as being, you know, a slave thing around your neck today, that's how it was. But of course it gets out of hand. The only way you can deal with people in the production sense, they got capitalism or slavery.
And people don't like when someone says something like this. But
no, because
like
they don't want to admit that it is slavery. You know it's slavery as soon as the force of law is being initiated against someone against their will. You know, even the Romans were beginning to end slavery before the Roman Empire fell because they suddenly discovered it was more expensive to maintain slaves than it was to have quote-unquote free labor, which did not mean labor that was free. It meant that the agents of the labor were free to choose or not to choose, great to work for somebody. And Rome was one of the first civilizations that began moving in that direction. You'll see that discussion, by the way, in a lot of great movies that were done about ancient Rome. And they have these debates in the Senate. I played some of those on my show, in fact.
The additional thought to all of that that I had was, people don't like it when you try to make an argument against the American / British African slave trade, which hasn't really taken place for that long of time compared to all the other forms of slavery and all the other countries throughout history that has been way worse. And hello, there's still slavery happening all over the world right now.
Sure. Slavery is a system that's inherited, okay? You had to have great thinkers like Jefferson to get away from that. It takes an individual to do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beauty of individualism. A committee would never have gotten rid of slavery. Not in a million years. Individualism is so important in that we free the individual and the individual's mind. Because if you think about all the great advances in history and in medicine and in science and in knowledge, there's always that one individual who stands out, who raises the entire civilization of the world, and the greatest one that we know of in history is Aristotle. Aristotle represents the right. Plato represents the left. This is the divide in any walk of life you care to talk about. Politics, social issues, religion, you name it. There is your divide right there, and the arguments have not changed since the time of Plato and Aristotle. It's all the same thing. Plato, primacy of consciousness. Aristotle, primacy of existence. And right there, that defines left and right. The left thinks that whatever it thinks is real. The right doesn't think that way. The right accepts reality and then adapts to it. And it's the same with human nature. The left is always trying to change human nature to fit its philosophy. The right accepts human nature and creates a philosophy that is parallel to that nature and that serves that nature to the best interest and well-being of humanity. And this is proven in theory, in practice, in everything. And this is why the left is so frantic. The left needs to close our minds. The left needs to use force. They can't argue what they're for. And most of the time they hide from what they represent. Because, frankly, they're evil. There's your moral polarity, evil and good. And I don't mean that in some afterlife religious sense, okay? Evil is that which harms human life. Good is that which increases human life and the quality of human life. And that always comes down to individualism and freedom. And there's no other kind of freedom. All freedom is individual freedom. The adjective shouldn't even be necessary, but people think there's some kind of collective freedom. Your rights don't change because you join a group. Everybody in that group has the same individual rights. And individual rights, by the way, is a social concept. It's not an individual concept apart from the society. It is the principle that defines the unit of society, the individual. And anything else becomes a collective. And what are the collectives? We're, you know, the Communist Party. There's a collective for you.
One of the big things about organizations or groups on the left is we want everybody to be equal, but not you, because you still need to be punished for what you did throughout history. Even though if you go further back, there's been many, like I said earlier, examples of, like, control over other people, slavery,
well,
racism.
No one who's alive today is responsible for anything that happened in history years ago. They're responsible for what they do today and where they're heading tomorrow. History is the determined. We live in a deterministic world. The determined is the past. We can't change it. So we can improve ourselves now. The present is the only thing that exists. The future is a potential. The future is the unknown. The future is the thing that we hope to achieve, and then doesn't things don't always work out. And no one can ever predict the future, even though by applying the proper principles, and I've been doing that for 30 years, I'm amazed. I've pretty well been batting 1,000. I operate on these principles, even if it doesn't feel good. Oh, I don't like where I'm going here, you know. And then you go there, but you know you're doing it on principle, and sure enough, you nail it. So the more you learn how to think properly, and thinking is what's lost in society today, is the ability to think and to tell the difference between what is true and what is false. People have lost even the most common knowledge of the most basic things in science and stuff. I mean, the whole climate change thing is such an incredible fraud from the word go, and yet people have been buying into it because they're on the left. The fraud assists their objectives. They're not interested in improving man's life.
The way that they claim that we can take care of climate change right now, their best option is to just tax the shit out everybody.
And of all things, carbon dioxide. This is like COVID. COVID, by the way, is part of the same scam. And carbon dioxide is the gas of life. It's where we get our oxygen to breathe from. No wonder they don't want any more of it produced, because they're trying to kill us. And it's not a pollutant in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
And although it's scientifically classified as a...
Greenhouse gas?
Greenhouse gas, thank you. It doesn't behave that way in practice. This is a reality I learned, both from watching it and then having the privilege of interviewing some of the top scientists on this very issue.
Like Christopher Essex.
Like Christopher Essex. He's been on the show a few times. Had him on just a few weeks ago, too, over the COVID issue.
I was just talking about him on one of my previous episodes that I've recorded. It's not out yet, but it will be soon.
Oh, excellent. He's one of the world's top people in his field, and yet the Canadian Parliament badmouthed him and declared him a danger to society. You know, he's a danger to them already. He's a danger to their left-wing philosophy.
What I was telling this person was Christopher Essex was one of the people in North America, if not around the world, who was studying climate models back in the 70s.
Yep. He's from the Department of Applied Mathematics at the University of Western Ontario. They dealt with the climate models, and this is where I learned about the limits of computation. Models only reflect the data that's put into them at that given moment. They cannot predict the future, and above all, they cannot predict human nature and changes in human behavior, which is why almost every economic forecast you get is off, because they assume everything will remain static. They don't realize that people change their choices, and that's something you can't measure. You can't measure freedom. That's why they don't want it. Because if you take away everybody's freedom, well, then they all become a cog in a wheel, and you can measure everything and regulate everything. And creativity is gone from humanity forever. This is what I see coming down the pipe with the way we're going. And our political party leaders, all of them, of all the major parties in this country, they do not deserve to be in politics. Because I would have thought, as many citizens might have, that at the very base point, they would understand that we live in a democracy and that everyone has individual rights. And shutdowns like this are so unthinkable, unconscionable, immoral. You want to wear a mask, you go wear a mask and poison yourself. I don't care. I'm not wearing one. Okay? But of course, they're going to force me one day. We're going in that direction. The whole thing is collapsing. And over things that are so stupid. It's not like we're talking about huge economic issues or nuclear war or anything like that. We're talking about a coronavirus or a change in the temperature of the Earth that's going to go maybe 1.5 degrees over 100 years.
One of the great things that Christopher Essex said that I relayed to this person I was talking to on a previous episode was, in order for us to even have a chance at predicting what's going to happen with the climate, everything would have to stop and stay still for 10 years.
Oh, you know, he once showed me that there's no such thing as an average temperature. And how he illustrated it was, what would the average temperature in the room that we were sitting in be? And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, if you take the temperature down there at the corner of the floor, it'll be a couple degrees cooler than it will up there at the ceiling in that corner in the far corner. And over here, it'll be a lot warmer because maybe a TV set is running or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anything can be in your room. You can make up whatever average temperature you want, but what does that prove of anything? It proves nothing.
And what people have to understand is, yeah, the climate's changing. It's always changed. And
of course, and if it doesn't change, life doesn't exist. Here again, you see this constant theme. Climate change is a pro-living thing. That's why we exist. Thank God for the moon that gave us the tides and made the water go in and out. And, you know, it's like almost having a, I don't know if you've ever owned an aquarium, but you got to keep the water moving to keep those fish alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
We live on a perfect planet from which we all grew and evolved and must live together. And unless we find a way to live together, that doesn't force us to kill each other, and there's only one way we've ever discovered, ever, and it's the only way possible, is freedom and capitalism. Socialism and all the other collectivisms always promise some future end that is never met because ends and means are always the same. And when they're using force and guns and arrests and everything to reach this magical end, even if it's to fight COVID, you will know that will never be the end. It is ends and means are the same. And this is what concerns me about this whole situation we're in today. I look forward to the day, hopefully, that most of our politicians are in something like a Nuremberg trial. And I'm not kidding you. That's how serious this is. And people are still asleep at the wheel.
One of the biggest tactics that the left has over everybody is the notion of guilt. Like climate change. There's bad weather happening. It's happened many times before in the past. Thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of years ago. But if we can make you feel guilty about what's happening right now, then we can convince you to give us money. And if Canada is going to have any kind of like climate initiative, okay, great. I want it to be mainly focused in adapting to the climate, and I want a receipt for every single dollar that you spend. I want to know where it goes, I want to know what you're using it for, and I want to know down the road if it has made an impact at all.
Well, that would be one way to measure something like that, but the whole guilt game is artificial, of course. Mm-hmm. Again, one cannot be guilty for anything like the weather, for heaven's sakes, that's so ridiculous. Or guilty because you're not wearing a mask and it's going to kill somebody else's grandmother. Evidence doesn't seem to matter that they're listening to their leaders and that they are basically giving up their individualism and their choice and their freedom for something that will never, ever be delivered to them, ever.
They try to make you feel guilty that you're part of Western culture, and that's why I really like Professor Jordan Peterson, which you've highlighted on your show and have had
been on our YouTube channel. Yes, I'm just right.
And he's been a guest, your guest at UWO. Yep. He's spoken, and he says the idea of charging the group for the crimes of specific members of that group, there's nothing more racist than that.
It's anti-justice. To hold someone guilty for the actions of others is the very thing we had to learn was injustice.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I don't like what's going on now, especially in the States. It's like, some of these bad people vote for you, so you're responsible for what they do.
Oh, yeah, the deplorables. This is the big stunt that Hillary Clinton tried to pull, right? By labeling the people who supported Trump deplorable, which tells you a lot about the left's attitude towards the very public that they think they're appealing to, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are elitists. They believe they have rights that you should not. And you can see that in the way this whole thing is being regulated with COVID. Go ahead and protest all you want. If you're anybody else, even an individual with your family going in the park, they'll come and lock you up. This is unprecedented.
And they try to exempt themselves from it because we're helping. We're doing something good.
What do you suppose a child molester does when he wants to attract a child that he's going to molest? Do you think he's going to scare him with, ooh, you know, he's going to make friends and here's some candy? It's the age-old story. And that is how the left attracts people to its cause. And above all, it promises something for nothing, which is why they love socialism and programs. You know, the left is completely unproductive. All production is on the right. On the right, you bake a pie. On the left, you grab that pie from the other guy and split it up among your friends. But you can't create anything. The left never has a production thing other than taking over some company and then running it into the ground. They're not responding to market demand. You see, market demand does not exist without being in a field of freedom. How do you know what I want to buy unless it leaves me free to choose what I buy? That's where demand comes from. It's from the human free will. And this is what gives economies power. If human free will is not fully exercised and fully in play in an economy, that economy becomes weak. Because then we're all forced to buy things we don't want, we don't use, we can't use, or we are forced to pay for that we'll never access, like our healthcare system, and on and on and on. And yet people will still buy into this. They're still going for the promise, the big promise.
One good mythological example of what you're talking about is Cain and Abel. Abel worked hard, he was successful, he did everything right, he was confident, and Cain, instead of doing those things, working hard, he just decided to be a whiny bitch about it and have murderous thoughts. Like, instead of doing the work myself, I'm just going to act like a victim and act like my brother is bad for being successful and doing better than me.
Your interpretation is a perfect description of what we're seeing between the left and right today. And one of the reasons that so many people on the left hate people like Donald Trump is precisely because he's good, precisely because he's productive, precisely because he can create, because he's successful, and because he gets things done. This is what they hate, because in looking at Trump or people like him, and I hear this all the time from people, it's very disheartening. They are actually condemning themselves. It's jealousy inverted. It's envy inverted. And this is where all this hatred comes for people like Donald Trump. And people like him, they don't take it on. They're in a different mindset entirely. I know a lot of people like him. What I'm talking about here, you don't have to be rich like Trump to be the kind of person that Trump is, even if all you're doing is you're a janitor or whatever, bricklayer, anything, right? There are people who are virtuous and work on virtue and know what they're doing and do not expect others to constantly be forced to assist them, you know? And then there are the people who don't want to put out that effort. They put out more effort stealing from you than they do from creating something for themselves.
And what you mean by good, Trump at times can be an asshole, but an asshole can still be good at something. We're not saying that Trump is or isn't a good person. What he does is good. He's good at what he does.
People might call him an asshole for that, but that's a nothing. I don't see it, right? I've been searching for years for clear examples of what people hate about Trump. I was just talking to a fellow on the phone yesterday, and I asked him, you know, he said he would support Trump, but he doesn't like Trump, and blah, blah, blah. He hates his rough edges. He hates this and that. I said, well, could you give me an example? He knows somebody else who's rich, and that guy's like that. So therefore, Trump's like that.
Yeah, he's lumping them into a group.
Right. Collectivist, all the way. And people don't even realize they're doing it. This is the thing. And if they don't realize how their own ideas are formed and how concepts work, they are at the mercy of those people who do. And the left is the master at this right now. They have studied human psychology since day one, which is why they get away with mass murder over and over and over again. Because people who are in a state of fear never act rationally. Look at people today, hiding from COVID. That's not rational. And they're giving up their freedom willingly. Just handing it over. Here, take some more of my freedom, please. And people are actually calling for more lockdowns and starting to report their neighbors. All this stuff happened in Nazi Germany, and for the very same reasons. Even then, they were germaphobes. People hiding from germs and stuff like that.
Yeah, like sterilizing their factories and stuff.
You see, whenever science discovers something new, then everybody goes nuts on it. Like, that's all there is to the world, right? Every new discovery floats to the top and becomes the big thing, right? And that everything has to be done around that. I've seen it so many times. I'm getting close to 70 years old, so I've been watching this frontline stuff for a long time and watching how people talk and think. And the thing is, you have to really find a group of people who are committed to, I guess, the truth, who are honest enough in their own dealings to always operate on what they know to be the truth and that they are not afraid to enunciate as that truth. And this is lacking on both what we call the left wing and the right wing, by the way. Today's right wing is really on the left, okay? Those are a lot of conservatives who call themselves conservatives are on the left completely. Hell, we got a party in Ontario called the Progressive Conservative. That's left-wing conservative.
Mm-hmm. People sometimes don't want to accept the fact, and over the last year and a half with what I've been going through, I've had to accept it myself, is the truth hurts sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the biggest truth that we don't like to face is, well, hey, we're all going to end up in the grave, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, they can't handle that. Why should I invest in life when at the end of life, it's going to end no matter if I'm successful or a loser?
which is why I think a lot of people don't like Trump, and to a Canadian extent, right, why people didn't like Stephen Harper, is because they refused to play their game. They refused to fit the mold that they wanted them to fit and react to things the way that they wanted them to react. And with Trump, he's not playing their game. He's beating them at their game. He teases and undermines and ridicules the media and calls them out on their bullshit.
Yep. He's living in the age of Twitter, of all things, because that way he's able to communicate to the public that otherwise would never even know anything about him if they depended on the media. And this has been a remarkable thing coming from him. Whenever you watch Trump in an official speech or an address, right, he is masterful. And then when he goes back to the office, back on Twitter, oh, so-and-so is an idiot. And that's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. And yet so many people around me, they cringe at it because they don't realize that what Trump is up against. The people talking against him are infinitely worse than anything he has ever tweeted. And I mean infinitely. There's no scale on which you can compare their tweets and their nonsense and their lies with anything Trump ever said. Whenever I heard a story that said something negative about Trump, just give it a week or two. You'll find out it's exactly the opposite.
Which is funny, because one of the main reasons that the left claim that Trump won is because, oh, everybody must be racist. It's like, really? Hundreds of millions of people are racist. It's because they got tired of your bullshit.
You just watched the recent nonsense over him not declaring that he's opposed to white supremacy, which he did
multiple times
over and over again, and the media just repeats the lie. That's how bad it is. And that media, when it's lying like that, is illustrating itself to be purely left, purely evil, purely collectivist, and it has not our interest at heart at all. It just wants power over us.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to be fought. This is important to everyone's life. The biggest thing that affects their lives beyond their families and everything is politics and the political climate in which they live, which is so easy to take for granted when you are fortunate enough to live in a free society. You know, I have relatives from behind the Iron Curtain who visited us back during the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they noticed when they came to Canada, they kept asking, where is the police? We don't see the police anywhere. They go to Springbank Park here in the city, and they don't see a whole squadron of police. Normal for them in Eastern Bloc countries, right? And they can't understand why everybody's so peaceful. It's alien to them. You have to understand that. Once you're in that mindset, you don't even know what freedom is anymore, and that's what they're counting on. They want to obliterate history. I could get into this even over a show like Star Trek, what they've done with the latest incarnations of it.
Did you like Picard?
I haven't seen it.
I thought it was pretty good. A lot of people shit on it.
You know, the earlier versions of Star Trek that were based on Gene Roddenberry, I mean, he had some of the greatest writers going for him, D.C. Fontana. These were all fans of Ayn Rand, by the way, and practically objectivists, especially in the early Star Treks. You know, they had a positive sense of life and would have been mostly on the right, even though they dealt with the other ideas. But the basic show had that positivity about it, about the future, and a lot of people criticized the show for that.
If there's one person I know who is a huge fan of Star Trek, it's you. And how much, apart from an entertaining outer space show, it has a lot of philosophy woven into it.
Well, Star Trek is a philosophy show. Most good science fictions are philosophy shows. Because in the fiction of science fiction, or even fantasy, I'm not a big fantasy fan, but I've seen a few shows that I really liked, you can separate philosophical principles from the reality in which they're generally applied that you can't normally do in real life, and you can isolate them and often turn a principle into a representation of some person who represents the principle in a show and bring it to light that way. And this is why parables and stories and
fables,
narrative are so important in conveying ideas. And it's one of the reasons that I use so many TV show clips and movie clips and other sources on my own show, because I'm contrasting a philosophy with its application, both in art and reality, so people can see how it is applied. I don't think there's any show I know of that's anything like my own show called Just Right. And it's something I would never have thought I'd even consider doing, but it evolved out of my experience, and that's what I'm still doing today, among my other activities.
You just mentioned Ayn Rand. A lot of people wanted to shit on Ayn Rand. Their weak argument was, oh, she doesn't care about the downtrodden, and she doesn't... It's like, no, you can be an individualist, an objectivist, and still care about people. It's just you shouldn't be forced to do it.
Yeah, no, they're just objecting to Ayn Rand because she believes in freedom. And they'll say that to you if you say you believe in freedom, too. Oh, you don't care about the downtrodden. Because in their mind, the only way to help the downtrodden is by putting a gun to your head and forcing you to give them money. This is the mentality of the left.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about force and coercion. In a free society, which I used to live in, and I remember downtrodden people, we never had anything like what you see in downtown London. There was no such thing. And poor people could get jobs. I remember my father used to employ people who just show up at the door, who were poor, and they could do small jobs. They could rake your garden and stuff. That's how people were. You can have minimum wage laws to get in the way, don't you know?
One of the great analogies that I like about what you had just said about labor and stuff like that and jobs and like homeless people or people in poverty is you can't hand someone a broom to sweep up the gutters downtown because that's our job.
That's right. You're reminding me of my first job in a unionized factory. I can't stand being bored, okay? If I'm just standing around waiting for something to do, I go nuts. So I was always working, and I was doing my work, and I was really producing well. And then when I'd get a job done, I'd clean up around my workstation. Well, sure enough, the union guy comes up to me one day and tells me that's not my job. I can't clean up my workstation. I had to wait for another guy. And then they would purposely not put that guy in place for like a long time so that they would know that I wouldn't be able to work for that time. Then I'm falling behind on my expected productivity, right? And these were constant tactics. You just multiply that by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times. Everything they can possibly do to make people less productive.
And that's one of the tactics of the left. They make...
Oh, yeah.
They use intimidation. They use force. They make you feel guilty.
That's all they got. They got nothing else.
Like, for example, we were talking about being accountable for what your supporters do. Nobody seems to call out when Hillary Clinton's supporters, more or less, or maybe Bernie Sanders supporters, smashed somebody in the face with a bike lock and a sock on the Berkeley University campus. Oh, well, they were doing good. They were doing what we want them to do, so they're exempt from criticism because we're the good ones, and who they hit in the face is the bad ones. And that person actually who hit the person in the face turned out to be one of the professors of the university.
Yeah.
He was just wearing a mask. It was great talking to you, and you can check out the Freedom Party of Ontario at freedomparty.on.ca, and you can check out Robert Metz and Robert Vaughn's show, justrightmedia.org. I could talk to you for another episode for sure, but...
Yeah, I bet. Take care.
You can check me out on Instagram and TikTok at Scott_loves_puns. Puns is with a Z. You can also find me on YouTube, Scott_loves_puns_ASMR. And you can also purchase my audiobook and new comedy EP for only $2 and $1 at swoaudio.bandcamp.com. Thanks for listening and have a good night.